Thanks to the two Johnnies, it's Monday the 3rd of July and this is Game On. And it's down to the final four in the Football Championship. Derry, Kerry, Monaghan and Dublin are all left standing. John Casey, Colm Cooper and Brendan Devaney share their weekend takeaways with us.
Aidan O'Brien reigns supreme at the Derby in Nacara. Ruby will reflect on the Ballydoyle dominance, plus Michael Corcoran on the Ireland under 20 rugby team and our weekend sporting highlights.
If you want to get in touch, please text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM.
Game On on 2FM.
So Marie, how was your weekend?
My weekend was good. It's so good I've left the music playing, but I'm going to turn it off now, Ruby.
Thought we're going to have a little bit of this. I suppose it is 2FM, music station, you know. Pump a few tunes there.
Why not? Why not? Could do worse, that's for sure.
You most certainly could. You most certainly could. So what was your highlight, takeaway? What did you enjoy most over the weekend, Marie Crowe?
Now, I was setting myself up for this big, huge weekend of Gaelic football, and it was grand. It wasn't the exciting display that I was expecting and hoping for. It was still entertaining, though, but that meant that I could dip in and out of all of the other sports that were going on, and there was plenty. So my highlight was Sarah Lavin. So Sarah Lavin, for anyone who doesn't know, is an athlete from Limerick, and she's been around for quite some time now. We've had her on this program quite a lot. She is 29, but she has been having a sensational season in Stockholm. Over the weekend, she ran a personal best of 12.73 seconds in the 100 meters. She finished second behind the world record holder and reigning world champion, and she qualified for the Olympics.
Big deal for her. Brilliant. Brilliant to see. I actually watched that as well, Marie. Thought the boxers did great as well. Thought the European Games as a whole were good. What else was on? Tour de France, I'm afraid, but no Irish cyclist. Just not floating my boat.
I love sport, Ruby, when I know people playing. So I think that's probably why I love local sport. I love club GAA matches because I see all the people walking around the village, and I see them when I was younger at Mass or in the shop, and I loved going up watching them play. So I actually really get that. I'm so more invested in a team or a person if I have met them or if I have seen them around or if they've been on the programme, whatever it is. I find that I'm way more connected to something when I know the people involved.
I think definitely there's definitely something that I would have had the Tour de France on the last couple of years at this time of day, for the last hour anyway, just was getting to the closing stages. Now, you'd want a lot of time in your hands to watch it all day or be an avid fan, but I must say, I haven't turned it on since. Obviously, Wimbledon started today, but that'll get interesting for, what am I, talking tennis fan this time next week, I suppose.
Knockouts.
Yeah. Well, they're all knockout, Marie.
Yeah. But the big ones. The big knockout
The big ones. Thought the golf was good last night, though. Thought there were some great winners. I thought Bernhard Langer at 66 years of age to win the US Seniors Open was incredible. I thought he had a great line too. He was maintained, there was plenty of life in him. His mother's going to be 100 in August, so he has good genes. I thought that was a great line. Yeah. And I thought it was great to see Ricky Fowler winning again.
Yeah.
First time in 4 years.
Yeah.
Like Ricky Fowler.
Good
and
personality.
I just thought it's fair going to keep plugging away 4 years without winning and keep tipping away and tipping away. And people would argue he's getting played plenty and he's got great contracts or whatever. But just
he lost his game like for a while.
Yeah.
Did that ever happen to you?
I didn't have the contracts he has to lose it for 4 years.
Yeah, maybe that's actually a consideration, that he mightn't be as under as much pressure when the glory days were good. So there's a bit of a cushion there.
Yeah.
Hunger. Maybe
could be one of it. Taylor Gooch won on the Live Tour. I'm afraid didn't watch any of that. Beat Bryson DeChambeau and Brooks Koepka. Came the first 3-time winner on the Live Tour.
I didn't follow the Live at all.
I know. It's just amazing like that you would watch the PGA, yet when you think of who's playing on that Live Tour. I had to look up that result today.
But you did look it up, so that's something.
I suppose it is. I suppose it's the start, isn't it?
Yeah, it does feel a bit inconsequential now, though, with everything that's happening. And so what was your highlight, though, since you did manage to check in on everything?
I think Ricky Fowler winning was probably my highlight. I just think he's a great player, and I think it's great to see someone get back on track and go and win. Then winning a playoff as well, to get level on the 18th, 24 under, with Colin Morikawa and Adam Hadwin, and then winning on the first playoff hole with a birdie. Good way to win too.
Yeah.
Sudden death.
Now, we do have...
Before you go any further, what did you make of the penalties? Before we talk to the lads.
Okay, the experts.
the experts. What did you make of the penalties in Croke Park the other evening?
Well, they were great penalties to start.
They were, weren't they?
Yeah, because like you kind of judge them up against, well, I judge them up against soccer penalties rather than Gaelic football penalties, because I see so much more of soccer penalties. So when I'm looking at them, I am thinking of soccer players taking penalties and thinking, right, well, that is like something that you might see in a Champions League final or whatever. So from this pure skill point of view, I thought they were brilliant. The drama was amazing. I loved seeing the players kind of mingling a little bit, you know, that you could see that they all could feel each other's pain. I watched Vinnie Corey afterwards, and the Monaghan manager, to see him at the very end when they had won, and he just fist pumped a tiny little bit and then went straight over to commiserate with the other team, which I thought was this amazing control that he had, you know, that he was able to switch from the celebration to the to being able to empathise with the other team so quickly. I thought that was amazing. What about you?
Yeah, I thought it's easy being a good winner to me is very important. Mm-hmm. And when you watch Vinnie Corey, you thought there's a very good winner.
Yeah.
How he reacted, even his lines after the game. We didn't win a match, we didn't lose a match, we won a penalty shootout. I just thought he was very gracious in mm-hmm. victory. And I enjoy someone who's gracious in victory.
I regularly tell people about Vinnie Corey that I interviewed him when he was coming to the end of his career. He did 17 seasons with Monaghan and had three small children at the time. And I asked him, is it difficult to, you know, the sacrifices that you're making to go and play for Monaghan? And he completely flipped it on his head and said, I don't see it as that at all. I see as setting a really good example for my children, because they're watching me every day come home from work, pack my gear bag, go out and train and do something that's bigger than me, which is playing for my county and representing my parish. And he said, he asked the question, am I setting such a good example rather than going home? What would I be doing sitting on the couch watching television? Like, look what they're seeing me doing and what that's teaching them. And that sticks with me always.
Yeah, good line, good takeaway.
Now, let's bring in the experts, Ruby.
I wish I thought of slanting it that way at times.
Yeah, true. So we have Brendan Devaney of Donegal, Colm Cooper of Kerry, and Mayo's John Casey all with us to talk about the weekend. I'm going to go to you first, Colm. I'm always curious about your thoughts on the bigger picture of Gaelic football. We had some brilliant weekends, then we had an okay weekend. Where do you think Gaelic football is now?
It's a difficult one, Marie. I think the last 2 weeks have given it a real injection, given that the knockout games and the qualifying lifted it after a pretty dull provincial series, to be perfectly honest. I don't think it hit the right note for any okay, maybe in Ulster the games are a bit more competitive and things like that, but I think the provincial was very, very boring, if I'm perfectly honest. I think the championship came alive a little bit 2 weeks ago, but I think in what was built as a brilliant weekend, I think the match, like when I looked at the fixtures last weekend, I said, yeah, they could all be really, really close, but it didn't work out that way, and it was a little bit of a disappointment, I suppose. Particularly, I suppose, Kerry and the Dublin games were very one-sided. We did get a bit of excitement at the end of the Monaghan Armagh game with the penalties and a bit of argy-bargy at the end of it, and I suppose Cork and Derry was a difficult, tough watch as well. So, all in all, it's while I thought it was gaining momentum, the air was sucked out a little bit last weekend, I think, but look, it's we're down to semi-final stage, and I think everybody would have probably had Dublin and Kerry in their top four. Derry probably would have featured for a lot of teams as well, but Monaghan have done incredibly well to come through their side of it. So look, that's where we are, and it's been at times a difficult championship to watch, Marie. I don't think anybody can argue with that.
Yeah, definitely. But we always tend to mask it when we get a fantastic game. I'm not sure what the semi-finals will hold, but you would hope there'd be something in it. John Casey, I just wanted to bring up one other point before we get into the games, from my view anyway. At the start of the league, Ruby and I spoke to Peter Canavan, and we were talking about the phenomenal fitness levels of the players, and Peter made the joke that back in January you wouldn't see him at all, let alone see a fit him. And it's like fast forward now 6-7 months, and it feels like they've taken it to a whole new level. And when you look at the game and the way it's played now, players have to grapple nearly for 20 seconds before they go on and run, and it feels like they've hit these unbelievable fitness levels. Is it something that you're seeing as well?
And even just the physicality when you're down pitch side, standing beside some of these fellas, and just to see they're built like rugby players, and just the sheer power, and it's so draining, I suppose. And when you fellas of that physical power taking lumps out of each other during the heated battle of a championship match, it's going to take its toll. And certainly you could see when Dublin yesterday turned the screw on Mayo's, so to speak, their legs were literally gone, and they ran us aground. So yeah, you have to give them the massive credit. But the way they mind themselves, like, back when I was playing Gaelic football, was you know, you got a couple of months off and then you recharge the batteries and you come back, there's absolutely no rest, there's no let up, it's a full year round thing. And you just go back to the phenomenon that is David Clifford and the performance he's putting in. Let's not forget his club, he played in Junior All-Ireland this year, so he has absolutely had no let up. So the level of what he's able to keep reproducing, his performances every week, is quite unbelievable.
Brendan, I suppose when you look then at Davy Clifford giving his interview after the game yesterday, and he looked so fresh and sprightly, was the way Kerry, I know they played on the counter, on the breakdown, and they got a lot of scores from it, but they attacked with so much pace, the ball was travelling faster than the players. Surely that helps players conserve energy.
Yeah, it does. I think probably the energy just wasn't worth throwing. And I see John Casey at the games, Ruby, still a fine figure of a man himself, let me tell you.
Take the air ahead, would he?
It would. As the Gooch will tell you there, you know, there was a thing where, if we're looking at tactics in football, particularly, you know, for 100 years, basically there was none. And what happened then was lesser teams tried to beat teams that were more talented. And it's taken a sea change for a lot of teams to go full court tactics. And it's something that we have never seen. The only team that's sitting out that won't do it is Mayo. And this is a reason when they come up against a packed defence that they have trouble then dealing with that and keeping their own shape and breaking it down. And if you look at Kerry now, going into that Tyrone game, their one fear was that Tyrone were going to come up, outwork them, ruffle them, get about them, get turnovers, and try and implement a game plan on them, which would stop them playing fluid football. But this is a different Kerry side now. And you spoke about the lead up to this championship. And, you know, that I think the last game in the group stages is where it threw us completely all off. But Donegal beat Monaghan, Kildare beat Roscommon, you know, Westmeath drew with Tyrone, Armagh beat Galway, Cork beat Mayo. That was the weekend where we were like, what is going on in the world of GA here? Like, these games are all completely up the left. And at that stage, Kerry and Dublin had two very easy games against Louth and Sligo. Now, they completely blew them away, but we didn't give them any respect for it. So we kind of had 5-6 teams maybe that potentially could win all Ireland. That's what we were all talking about. But after the weekend there, Ruby, as you mentioned, the tactical setup of Dublin and Kerry, and particularly in the second half, once they get under the lead, you having a prayer, because their know-how and their ability to sit, to tackle, how they're set up individually and as a team, once they break into space in, you're having a prayer against them. And that's why you would feel that we've already almost got a final date sorted, you know, that this is going to be an unbelievably difficult proposition for Monaghan and Derry.
Colm, just given the questions that were been asked about Kerry heading into this game, and just observations nearly more than criticisms, where was their defence at? What level were their midfield pairing at? How can David Clifford keep consistently performing every single week? What pleased you the most after watching Kerry this weekend?
I think probably it was defensively, Marie. I think they were very, very sharp. They were hungry. They were, I think they had 24 turnovers in the match. That tells you its own story. And they scored 111 from that. So they obviously, they've upped their ante, you know. And, they were bouncing through the Munster Championship, even through the group stages, I didn't feel. So I suppose we have to remind ourselves, this is a brand new structure this year as well, and teams have approached it differently. And perhaps Jack O'Connor, and this is perhaps, he might have said to himself, we don't need to be ready until we get to Croke Park, and realistically we need to try and peak for 3 games. And maybe that's the approach Kerry have taken, and that's why maybe they've been rusty, and maybe they left fitness levels a little bit later this year. It would certainly see they appear to be bouncing off the ground. But I think think the two things I would take from the Kerry performance were certainly the defensive aspect, where they were very, very strong, and I would say nearly all the Kerry players beat their direct opponents the last day. And secondly, the emergence of Dermot O'Connor at midfield. He was excellent. For people who aren't that familiar with Dermot O'Connor, he's been an excellent minor. He was a brilliant under 20 player, but with David Moran retiring, we were wondering, would he have, I don't think anyone questioned his ability, but I suppose the leadership quality, and that he stepped up big time the last day, and he put on a powerful display, and I think that bodes well for Kerry, because the confidence he should gain from that is very, very good. And look, we know that they have the quality up top with Clifford and Shawnee O'Shea and the rest of the guys. So look, they're in a good position, and I think they've timed their run pretty good. The next few weeks will tell a lot, but I think Jack O'Connor has been very clever in how he's approached the year.
John Casey, Kerry had a bit of a bite around them as well. You kind of could feel they were able to meet that Tyrone fire with fire, which isn't something we always see.
That's for sure. They were absolutely ravenous, and as Gooch said there, you know, they won every single individual battle, and it'll be interesting, funny enough, because there was major doubt over Dermot O'Connor did get man of the match, scoring 1-2 in a phenomenal display, but everybody, me included, fully expected Brian Kennedy and Con Kilpatrick to sway the midfield battle quite easily, if I may add, but that completely didn't happen. It's almost like Jack O'Connor threw the gauntlet down to Jack Barry and Dermot O'Connor and said to them, they're saying you're not good enough for our midfield, and go out and prove a point. Now, there is one thing, Dermot O'Connor has been round a while, as Colin mentioned there, but, you know, going in against Derry, they're playing Derry. Derry have two phenomenal midfielders themselves, and that's going to be a very intriguing battle, because I tell you what, Brendan Rodgers and Conor Glass are basically as good as they'll come up against. So that's going to be an intriguing battle. But Kerry, just in general, you know, they laid down a marker yesterday. Like, the Tyrone jersey was almost like a red rag to a bull. You could see the venom in their tackle, the bite in their tackle. They were first to everything, and they were just got on top early on. There were only 3 points, but as in, like what Dublin done yesterday in the second half, like that's when the games are won and lost, and they just turned the screw, and a very impressive performance. But yeah, look at here, now they're going to have a big match against Derry. Derry certainly won't fold against them. Marie, I have to say, the Derry match yesterday, and the Cork game was a very hard watch, I have to say, even harder to commentate on, because it was very flat for the last 20 minutes or so. It just nearly petered out, if you want. But yeah, I certainly think Derry will be able to bring something. They bring something different to the setup, and Kerry will probably find it tougher to break them down, but certainly lay down a marker, yes, on Saturday.
Brendan, Tyrone were flat and second to every ball yesterday, which is very un-Tyrone-like. Where do Brian Duher and Fergal Loughan go? How do they re-energise that side? Do they have to change tactics, look for new players? I mean, they just looked miles off, Kerry.
Yeah, Ruby, it's a bit of a worry. I don't know if the lads will be taking over next season or not. As it stands, obviously that season that came through and won the All-Ireland, you know, did surprise a lot of people, but they deserved to win it. They almost had a complete write-off season. The first team, I suppose, ever to win All-Ireland, they get beat in back-to-back championship games. So people just said this, and they put it down to a year-off scenario. So this was a big season for them coming into this championship. And I think going back to those games that I mentioned, Ruby, where the teams that should have topped the group, as we were thinking, because of poor performances from them, ended up having to play another game. I'm not making any excuses for them, but certainly there didn't seem any energy in them. Did that extra game, it obviously was never going to help him, maybe. Now, Tyrone did play well against Donegal. You just didn't see any of that play against Kerry. And in many ways, you know, Mayo the same. There didn't seem to be the spark. Now, both managers come out and said, listen, nothing to do with it. And as Colin was saying earlier, just trying to figure out your season versus the league that's been run off every week versus your provincial into this, you know, trying to keep everybody fresh and at it and up for games, like that is a difficult thing to marry. And there didn't, when they came down to the fight, you see, you just didn't see it from at the weekend. You didn't see it from Tyrone. You didn't see it really from Mayo either. Now, how much of that was down to fatigue, it's really hard to say, Ruby, but certainly I think their performances in those last games caught them. They would have been much better getting into these matches with a week's rest, but it wasn't to be. But where Tyrone go from here, it's interesting. Obviously, there's been a sprinkling of players, particularly obviously the Canavans coming in to the side and the brilliance that they have. And you know, you think you could build forward lines around this. You know, you have players like, I suppose, Donnelly, Matty Donnelly, you know, the likes of Petey Hart and these boys around a long time. You know, but by and large, the most of the team, Kilpatrick and McGeary, McCurry and these boys, they're still good time on their side. So I don't think there'd been any massive change there. It just seems like Tyrone don't really know themselves since, you know, everybody else has got tactically astute. And that's what I'm saying, when we get to Croke Park and the lads have mentioned now that the top teams are all playing it the same way, you got to be absolutely brilliant to beat the top teams at Croke Park. And that's why Tyrone just weren't on it. But it certainly was a very unusual performance for them. But how much that went down to fatigue is hard to say.
Fatigue. Everyone has 2 weeks to the next game, Colin Cooper. Do Kerry have to do much different to beat Derry?
It'll be, I think they'll be looking for a similar performance and the same bite as they brought yesterday, or that they brought Saturday will be, but I don't think they have to change too much. I don't think the team will change too much. I think Croke Park suits them, their kicking team. I think over the whole weekend you saw the teams that kicked the ball in Croke Park. You prosper more, you create more goal chances. Teams that want to run the ball, it takes so much out of you. It's such a big space, Croke Park. I'm not sure you can just base your game and try and win over 70 minutes by just running the ball. So I think that's why Croke Park will suit Kerry. They'll keep wide. Derry are a very structured team. As John mentioned, Brendan Rodgers and Conor Glass are fairly formidable in the middle of the field. But at the same time, I think Derry are coming up against a Kerry side that are very different than anything that they played in Ulster, so they will bring different challenges to them. So I think Jack O'Connor will be just asking for more of the same, and for Derry, I think they'll have to be at the peak of their powers to contain Kerry and hope Shane McGuigan and a few more of his colleagues hit a hot day, because that's what they're going to need to overcome the Kerry challenge.
John, Derry just seemed to control that game. You know, whatever they wanted to move through the gears, they were able to do it. Will they have taken away much from it, though, just given now they have to face Kerry in just a couple of weeks?
Well, I suppose the thing that will be delighting them is that Kerry will be hot favourites after blowing Tyrone away. But certainly, you know, they were put under the littlest bit of pressure, Marie, after Rory Maguire goal. I think that just put a point between them. But I was literally going, yes, we've got a game on here now. Derry are going to have to come at them, or Cork are going to come at them. And straight from the kick-out, they went down, and Conor Doherty goaled. And basically, that put the game to bed. I think their manager, Ciarán Mina, described it as worth more than 3 points because of the time. And I mean, it's mentioned in sport that it's the best time a team is vulnerable. It's just after their score. They're kind of still celebrating. They're still on a high. So it was a bit of a sucker punch for... But one thing going forward and looking at it, I think Shane McGuigan probably put in his worst performance of the year from a Derry perspective. He couldn't shoot, and penalty save as well, although it was, I have to say, a brilliant save. So that's something I think that the likes of Derry will be pinning their hopes on, to know that the likes of McGuigan, I mean, Paul, they've got some outstanding players. Their work ethic is sensational. We know the way they play football, and something that they will definitely, from Jack O'Connor, will have Kerry ready for a semi-final is they attack from absolutely everywhere. That Conor McCluskey, number 4 on his back, he's up on the full forward line most of the game. Gareth McInnes was superb yesterday, and as was Conor Doherty. Conor Doherty got a goal. He could have got a second one and there, you know, a couple of points. So that's the way they play. They have, of course, the evergreen Chrissy McKay get back. Probably he'll be given the job of Mark and David Clifford, I'd imagine. But I certainly think that Derry will ask, being a bit unfair to Monaghan, because I think Monaghan was the result of the week and they finished third in their group. They're now in an All-Ireland semi-final. But I think Derry will ask more questions of Kerry than maybe Monaghan will of Dublin.
Brendan, you don't want to be patronising to Cork in any way, but for them to have got to that stage, given everything that they went through throughout the year, you'd have to think that there's going to be a lot of positives that they can take, that they can build on from how their season finished.
Yeah, definitely. I suppose they're one of the stories. We're waiting for teams to come back and jump up to this 7-8 teams that seem to be pulling away. And if you look at the league, a lot of the teams would get relegated from Division 1 would come back up the following season, and it seemed to be the way it was. And then Armagh kind of pushed themselves in, and Galway got back in, and then obviously Derry coming up through the leagues again. So there's a squeeze up there now every season at the very, very top. And you've seen obviously Armagh and Donegal getting relegated this year. There's just not any room. It was for a while there, you know, you had five or six teams tended to be in about, and they were, you know, they were going to be safe. It might be one drop, they come straight back up. But Cork now look like they're getting their attitude back. And listen, I spoke to Kevin Walsh before he joined, or just after he joined Cork, and he said, listen, the footballers are there. You know, as talented footballers as he'd worked and seen with, he says you need that structure and that bit of belief. So he's certainly seen the belief coming back with Cork. Your fear would have been really just when he came chasing Derry, and it was a wee bit like Mayo. You know, there were some poor shots and that came in, and you just couldn't see how they were going to open up, you know. And you're looking at teams in. Once a team is set in that defensive shape, you either need serious runners coming off the shoulder, you need a wee bit of guile, somebody to drop the shoulder and pick a wee short pass, or someone to have something different. And it was as if then they only had a kind of running game. And I know they're hampered, obviously, with Hurley and coming on, and that obviously him being fully fit and playing, it might have been different. But certainly, you just looked at them. There didn't seem to be any way they were going to open up Derry. And Derry, in many ways, were in real control and cruised through that second half. The response to the goal straight after Carr's goal was such a hammer blow, and Derry probably had a couple other opportunities on top of that. But yeah, Cork certainly on the way up and on the way back. But Derry, in many ways, no one had been talking about them all season, even though they won Ulster again. There was back-to-back Ulster. There was very little talk about them. They had through the group stages and nobody was mentioning Muller, and they've come in probably completely on the radar. Monaghan certainly a surprise package, but again, it's all about staying in the game for the two sides going into this semi-final.
Colin, when I was watching Armagh and Monaghan, I was thinking of Ruby, because Ruby always says that a team that sets up not to lose ultimately ends up losing. Were Armagh too negative?
I think they've been too negative all year, Marie, if I'm perfectly honest. I watched them in Tralee against Kerry in February, and I was quite taken back. I remember Lee Keegan, I think we were covering the game for RTÉ that night, and I couldn't believe the game was there for them to win actually that night, and they ended up losing by a point like they did a lot of games this year. And I can see why teams set up that way if you don't have too much up top in attack. But for me, with a team, Rhian O'Neill, Stephen Campbell, Rory Grusin, Andrew Murnan, I just can't believe the way they played all year. I think they were very cautious. They were very cagey. And if you don't show some ambition and a bit of bravery going forward, you know, it's going to catch up with you. And I think that's why they lost a lot of tight games this year. And I just think they played a little bit with the handbrake up. And I think when they do a review of the year, they look back and would. I'd be amazed if they didn't have regrets on how they played, because as I watched that match on Saturday evening, I was saying this game was set up for Monaghan to win. They were just hanging in there. It was point for point. Even when the black card came and the initiative was given to Armagh for extra time for the first 8 minutes, they didn't put any squeeze on. They sat back. They allowed Monaghan to have the ball for 3 or 4 minutes without a tackle nearly going in. So for me, they lacked a bit of ambition all year, Marie, and I think they paid a heavy price for it, because it wouldn't have taken a whole pile more to win that. I think if they stuck to their guns, I think this came on the back of maybe last year, where they feel they conceded too much against Galway in that quarter final, and I think they went full circle to go back and set up very defensive this year. And I don't think it has helped them. I don't think it helps their team, and it's just very frustrating for them, because if they only added 5%, they'd probably be looking forward to an All Ireland semi final now.
John, Armagh may well have been too cautious and a bit careful, but Monaghan, to be fair to them, and Conor McManus in particular, some of the scores he got, even his two penalties, he was incredible to watch on his own for a player that's playing as long as he's playing.
Absolutely incredible. I mean, probably the difference, and it was him, least we not forget, he did score the leveling free to bring the penalties, but he also conjured the free himself. I mean, he was the guy to give the ball to. He was the go-to man. You could see how pumped he was for it. And certainly, you know, Colm mentioned there, like, Armagh will be absolutely kicking themselves. It was there for the taking. That's their third penalty loss, two quarterfinals and the Ulster final. I think they lost a McKenna Cup game as well on penalty. So certainly any Armagh fans won't want to see them going to level after extra time to see a penalty shootout. But McManus is one of these fellas, you know, a player for the ages, so to speak, and the go-to man. And you know, I have to say, for Vinnie Corey, who took on that job, he was 17 years a player, as Marie mentioned, Monaghan to the core. And it was just so composed to see him at the end of that game, how composed he was. And look, when you've got McManus on your team, you've always got a chance. And it was just a phenomenal in for him and the composure with the penalties. But I hate to say it, the penalties is a terrible, terrible way to decide such a big game. I don't know what they'd be thinking of Armagh. I feel particularly for that Callum Comiskey. He missed the two penalties for Armagh. That's what a lot of people, unfortunately, will be remembering him for after the weekend.
I don't think there'll be too many people who don't feel like you. But Brendan, Kieran McGeaney felt aggrieved afterwards that he didn't get some of the calls he should have got, and maybe that a bit extra time was played that shouldn't have been played. Had he a case to make, or was he just not taking defeat too well?
Yeah, listen, I think go back to Colm's point. Listen, it's Armagh have the tools and the ability to go and beat that Monaghan team. They just have been holding back so much this season. It's just like, Armagh, a couple of them games out of them out, could have very easily been in the league final. They end up getting relegated, and you're just looking at a side that has so much ability going forward. I mean, I covered a Tyrone Armagh game, and our Tyrone in complete control. Armagh lose Rian O'Neill, of course, and then they just decided to have a go at Tyrone, and you're on about that spare man that Colin mentioned with the black card. They went after Tyrone with a man down and started to overturn the ball and got right back into the game, and were unlucky near the end. They had Morgan. They could have sneaked a draw out of that match, and I'm sitting going, there you go. That's GA. That's football. That's how you do it. You attack the opposition. Sure, at times you have to drop in and fill the holes, but then at times you've got to go for the games, and that's why they didn't. And I think, listen, talking about referee and decisions and things, you got waste of time at this point. And if you look at Armagh, three penalty shootouts in a row, and I was thinking those players have put in so much, 10 years under McGeaney. You know, if you look at it, if they'd have won those three, they would have been All-Ireland semi-final last year. They'd have won Ulster, which they are desperate to do, and they've been All-Ireland semi-final this year. And really, those lads' careers now are kind of going to be defined, unless something major happens for them next season, by those three penalty shootout losses. It's a very difficult one to tick, but I think it comes down more to the attitude of Armagh. If they had done that extra time, what I seen in Healy Park, they would have beat Monaghan. And that's the thing would annoy me. And as John was saying, they're very tough on a player to have to hit two penalties like that. The pressure they're under, unbelievable. I mean, Marie mentioned them. You know, I'd play a lot of soccer too. It's such a different world hitting a soccer penalty to a Gaelic one. So, I mean, the fact that Vinnie Corey says they didn't practice the penalties is unbelievable. I mean, you got to say composure and nerve, unbelievable from the two sides.
Brendan, with all of that in mind, do you think that Kieran McGeaney should stay on as Armagh manager?
Well, I just think some people have the right, Marie, and I suppose there'll be two camps in Armagh be talking about this. I mean, Armagh, I've got fanatical about the football. I mean, I was joking with John previously, like the Mayo of Ulster, you know, they pack out grounds, their league games are packed, they've got fanatical because they were so devoid of success for so long. You're seeing that in Derry as well. So they've been so close. You couldn't say that McGeaney's not doing a good job. He has them organised, he has them together, they're all fighting for each other. And you mentioned Monaghan before. Monaghan are like a club team, all the players keep on playing and playing. You know, you look at McManus, Vinnie Corey, the long he played, you know, Paul Finlay, the Hugheses. You've got that vibe in Armagh, it's in Monaghan as well, and everybody wants to play, and all the players like McGeaney. So you make that case for it, then you could make the other case to say, well, listen, have Armagh held themselves back from achieving in the last couple of seasons? So you would have to play a bit of devil's advocate with that one, Marie. But I just think the stature that McGeaney had as a player and now what he puts into Armagh, I think people realise it's right in his heart, just like Vinnie Corey. I mean, can you blame him for coming up short in such a tight game? It's such a difficult one, Marie. But I certainly think that if Armagh had a went for Monaghan, particularly in out of time, they would have won the match, and that does have to come back to the management.
Yeah, and I'd say you'd have to weigh up as well, is it worth the hassle? Because I'd say now what he has to deal with is not even worth thinking about. Colin, we have a text in about the penalties, and our texter is wondering, should the referees be brave enough to get the penalty retaken for goalkeepers moving off the line before the kick is even taken? Did you see some of that, Colin Cooper?
There was definitely a couple of penalties where the goalkeepers were off the line. I suppose we don't have VAR in the GA. We haven't got that advanced yet. And I suppose how quickly you could turn it around. I suppose it can be done in Croke Park because you've so many cameras and you've the big screens to show it. So it's certainly something that I think the umpires should be watching closer, because there's no doubt goalkeepers are coming off the line and making it more difficult for the taker. So it doesn't seem to be pulled up, but I think it's certainly something that they should be looking at, particularly for the games in Croke Park, because it should be easier to identify.
John, we've eased our way around to this one. As a Mayo man, how are you feeling?
wounded, very wounded, deflated, very deflated, but not hurting Ruby as bad as we have done in the past, because we didn't lose a game by conceding, scoring a few own goals for the opponents or a ball hopping over the bar. You know, it was just, or by a bad refereeing decision even, we were truly and utterly walloped in the second half of a game. So you can have no complaints. Dublin, of course, would wait for a Mayo jersey before they decided to bring their best performance for the last 4 years, so to speak. And I think I was talking to a few locals here during the day, and there is a few worrying, I suppose, stats coming through. Like, Mayo have played 6 championship games. I'm not sure if you're aware, the boys are even aware of this. Mayo have played 6 championship games this year, and no starting forward has scored a goal from play. So that's a major kind of a worry. We have got goals, all right. Owen McLaughlin got one against Kerry. Tommy Conway came on as a sub and got one against Cork. And of course, David McBrien got that brilliant goal against Galway. So we're just not scoring enough goals. We looked out on our feet in the second half. We did play 3 games. Mayo did play 3 games in 14 days. But, you know, I think Mayo's season, Ruby, unhinged with the concession of the 1-6 in a row down in Limerick against Cork, having to play that extra game. Coughing up those leads. So, like, I mean, Mayo have played 6 championship games, 1-3 and lost 3, and it's certainly not you're not going to win an All-Ireland with a record like that. But yeah, look, at it, it's a tough one to take. There was great excitement when Kevin and this management team got appointed, but for me, it's a personnel thing. You know, it's not, you can have the best managers in the world, but if you just haven't got players that are going to be ruthless and kick the ball over the bar on a regular basis, then you're going to be in trouble. And I suppose the worry was, I gave Mayo a chance at halftime yesterday. I particularly wasn't too confident before the game, but then when I saw the fight in them and I thought, wow, they responded very well after the Baskell goal. I think they got the next 4 in a row to put them ahead. But then the second half, it was just blitzkrieg stuff, and that was a little bit of a worry. But, you know, a team that we struggled to score 14 points against Louth, but yet Kerry and Dublin go to town on them, scoring 10-45 or something between the two of them, and that just is a worry. So look, you have to just tip your hat to Dublin, Ruby, from yesterday, an absolutely unreal performance for them.
Speaking of goals, Colin Cooper, Dublin have a nose for goal, and they were going after them at every chance they got.
They were. They smelled blood yesterday, and I think the third quarter of that match was just a demolition job. But they were dangerous throughout. Pasquale again stepped up yesterday. Big player, has been around the Dublin squad for a while, but we didn't see that type of performance in a Dublin jersey. But he looks so dangerous. He's a real speedster and built for Croke Park. And I suppose the worry for all the remaining teams is, you saw that, like, there was a shot of Brian Fenton at the end of the game, and you saw how much it meant to him. Like, the hunger's back in Dublin. And I was talking to Peter Canavan and Corey, I say we were working on the Sunday game, and before the game I was saying, I'm not sure the Dublin bench scares me like it once did, but then I saw Kilkenny, McCaffrey, Paddy Small coming on. So yeah, they're back to where they are. Like, there's a real look when you're bringing Cluxton back, and I think it's probably the last year for maybe 4 or 5 of the players. They really want this All-Ireland back, and they're doing whatever they can to achieve it. And even yesterday, Conor Callan, you could say he was quite enough. Maybe like Clifford for Kerry, wasn't at his best. And don't worry, those boys will turn up the next day. So they're a very dangerous proposition, and they're beginning to pile, which is a worry for everyone else, Ruby.
Brendan, I was reading Eamon Fitzmaurice and he said that they're playing like a team with no medals, which is a very worrying prospect.
Yeah, certainly. And I suppose you have to feel a bit of pain before you can get back into that type of hunger, because it looked like the last couple of seasons at Dublin weren't that interested in some of the games. And that's, you know, that's normal enough. They're only the big games in is going to really capture the imagination. I was even thinking about Roscommon playing them early in the season at Croke Park. Can you imagine Roscommon dressing room? You know, they hadn't won a game in Croke Park in 40 years or whatever. They're coming up here. They must have been hopping out the door, whereas Dublin are coming out thinking, it's just another group game. You know, whatever happens, we'll be fine. And to get yourself out of that mentality, it's very, very difficult. And some new players come in and out. But you're right, as the lads mentioned there. I mean, last season I was up at the game with Kerry. And, you know, you're looking at Dublin thinking, this is Kerry's to win. But Dublin were right in there. And that was out without Conor Killen. And as you say, Cluxton, Mannion, Jack McCaffrey come back. And now you're thinking, right, if them two teams do end up playing each other, with all those lads back in, you know, is that going to tip the balance Dublin ways? But, you know, even the first half wasn't great. A lot of imperfections in there, you know, balls dropping short and Dublin a wee bit so-so. But then when they hit that 1-7 in a row, just completely destroying Mayo. And then there was the setup, Marie, what I was talking about earlier. They just sat in, you know, like a complete counter-attack team. And you're just like, where are Mayo going to go? And it became uncomfortable to watch them because they were so much charge. And then they unleashed the bench and you're like, right, you know, you're nearly taking the pee at this point because they were breaking the space and the rocket boots of Jack McCaffrey coming on. You're thinking, right, how has this man been kept back to do this kind of damage? So, yeah, listen, everything now is set up for this Dublin team to win this All-Ireland. And in many ways, I suppose from Desi Farrell's era, you know, he wins that first one this season. He didn't get a lot of respect for that. People saying that's still the Jim Gavin team. You've had a couple of years now of no All-Ireland, which for most counties is normal enough. This is a massive, massive year because I think, as the lads were saying there, those boys that come back will probably step away again. So I think this is one big last hurrah. And much of it's around Desi Farrell. You know, out of respect to him, I think the guys realised they needed to come back to put Dublin back at the pinnacle of football in Ireland. And that's a massive thing for them and for Desi.
Okay, guys, we're out of time. Brendan Devaney, Colm Cooper and John Casey, thank you so much for joining us. We're going to take a very quick break, but do stay with us because Michael Corcoran is standing by to preview the Ireland Under-20s.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. Michael Corcoran is with me in the studio. We're going to look ahead to the Ireland Under-20s against Fiji. Michael, you were in last week filling me in on how they're getting on. A pool game, but they need to win it.
Yeah, it's the final series of pool matches tomorrow. So, you know, despite the big win last week, they're in a situation where they are joint top of the table with England, behind England on points difference. England play Australia, who themselves are not out of it either. And Ireland play Fiji, who are the fourth team in a pool of four. Now, there's only three pools, so the pool winners of the three pools are guaranteed to go through, plus the best runner-up. So the best runner-up will come from the pool that involves Ireland. So a victory tomorrow would be sufficient for Ireland to get to a semi-final, but they'll obviously want to get higher up in the ranking for those semi-finals, if you understand, with a win. But it's all to play for, as they say.
All to play for, as they say, and Richie Murphy has to make a few changes.
He has made a few changes. Now, some of them enforced, obviously, Ruby. There's a couple of players, there are three players altogether who are suspended for it, which is a lot. That's the reality about it. It's an awful lot. And there's Ruan Quinn is ruled out because of a head injury thing. They have a squad which is kind of depleted going in. I think there's 25 25 players altogether available, and there are potentially three matches left, but two of the Ruan Quinn would be back possibly for a semi-final of the competition, and two of those suspended may be back for a semi-final or final of the competition as well too. So it's a very condensed format. That's the situation there, but bit of pressure on them. So that's why he's made all of those changes, given the fact, I mean, if they were playing England tomorrow or Australia tomorrow and were well down the table and needed, you know, to win and score four tries, I think he'd have picked a completely different team. But they're playing the team who are fourth of four and were absolutely pasted by England last time out.
So it was a help. James McNabb and Rory Telfer are those players who will be back, were Ireland to reach the final of this competition. But when you look at what's going on with the players at the Under 20 World Cup, it kind of starts making you thinking about the real World Cup, Michael Cochran, and how quickly things can go wrong.
Yes, they can, but the good thing about it, Ruby, to be fair, is that with the senior Rugby World Cup in September, I mean, there's obviously a bigger gap in between matches, so fatigue and things like that doesn't really come into it. But squad rotation will come into it, injury will come into it, and suspension does also. So that's why you've got to be careful with your squad selection. You know, I mean, you may very well have, say, for example, if Ireland had an out half, I'm not going to mention any names because people think I'm obsessed with this fellow, right? If Ireland had an out half,
don't worry, we all are.
Yeah, if Ireland had an out half and he wasn't 100% in terms of fitness, so would you name him in the squad for the Rugby World Cup, knowing that he might miss the first game, possibly maybe the second match, and then you've only two fit out halves? That's assuming that you have to bring in three. Or will squad versatility have to come into where somebody who could play maybe 12 or 15 or fill in 10 jersey number 10 in an emergency? You know, there's a bit of all that attached to the whole thing, you know. So it's not just, I mean, most people could rattle off, if you're talking about the senior World Cup now, most people could rattle off 25, 26 players who would definitely go to the World Cup. And I remember having a conversation before the last one in Japan with Joe Schmidt, and he said the hardest part for him was filling the last 3 to 4 positions, because the situation is that they're the hardest ones, and they're where you need people for a bit of flexibility.
Just on this Ireland under 20 before we finish up, what are the expectations?
I think Ireland will beat Fiji, yeah. They will. I mean, Fiji aren't great. So Ireland will win that. Whether it's sufficient enough to get top of the pool or come second, who knows? But I think they're good enough to win tomorrow and to make it to the semi-final of the competition. And I'll be back here again some other time chatting about that.
We love these under 20s.
Brilliant.
Before you go, Michael Cochran, which draw in the semi-final is better then? Top the pool or finishing second?
I think probably top the pool, I'd say, Ruby, to be fair, but it'll depend then on, you know, how the other two pools are going. France are 10 points out of 10 so far, so they look as if they could be the number one ranked team. So I'd prefer to be second ranked, to be fair, because top ranked team will play the best runner up, and I wouldn't like to be playing France.
Right, okay, Michael Cochran, thank you so much for coming in. We're going to take another quick break. Stay with us though, because I'll be putting Ruby to the test on the weekend's race.
Game on 2FM.
Now, welcome back. It's time to turn our attention to racing. Ruby, I watched a good bit of the Curragh this weekend. I was working, but still, I did watch it. Auguste Rodin seemed to be the big star, winning the Dubai Duty Free Irish Derby for Aidan O'Brien. Were you as impressed as everybody seemed?
I probably wasn't, Marie. He got the job done. That was a good enough time. It was only just outside standard, so it was a decent enough time, but they had a fair tailwind as well. But I wasn't. I probably, after watching him at Epsom, where he looked, the Epsom Derby looked such a good race. Himself and King of Steel pulled so far clear of the third and fourth, and you were thinking, wow, could this be a superstar? You probably were expecting a bit much, and he didn't dazzle at the Curragh, but when you look at it and suppose think of what Aidan O'Brien probably has planned for him, he probably was looking at the Irish Derby thinking, I don't need to peak him for that. He can win without peaking him. And he's going to go now to the King George at Ascot towards the end of July, where he'll take on older horses and he'll have to have him peaked again. So he probably just brought him to the Curragh and won with him without peaking him. So you have to take it that when the horses can win and they're not at their best, and he didn't look to be, it's always a good sign.
Sounds like the Kerry footballers.
It's the same thing. I mean, we've had this row for years, or I have, but Donegal Callaghan, and used to work with us, Marie. Horses are athletes, and you have to train them and plan them and peak them and things like that. And it's an art that Aidan O'Brien has definitely mastered. Not too many others have, but he probably is still a very good horse. And he's an amazing pedigree too. He's by Deep Impact, the Japanese champion. He's out of a mare called Rhododendron, who's an Irish bred mare by Galileo. So he's an incredible pedigree. He got the job done on Sunday, but I think there's more to come.
Was there a little bit of concern over the small crowds?
The crowd was down a fraction on Sunday. Funny, I think the Curragh just got unlucky. And I'm not always one to stand up for the Curragh, by the way, but I think it did with the weather. Friday night was blustery and cold. Saturday afternoon was no better. And in Kildare yesterday, Marine, the wind was blowing a gale. If you were on the fence, would you go? I don't think you did. And I think if you just got a really nice day, I think the crowd would have been the other side of last year. It would have been up rather than being down a couple of hundred. It would have been up. But that's, the weather can impact on all things. I mean, racing or the Irish Derby doesn't have a following like Dublin football. The hill was packed for that game.
Yeah.
But that was the only time I saw it full over the weekend as well, for Ireland quarterfinals. So it can go both ways, and the weather definitely had an impact.
So the fair weather fans stayed at home. Fair enough.
They did.
Right, Ruby, I'm not here tomorrow. You'll be back.
I am. Where are you going tomorrow?
I have a day off.
Do you?
Yeah. So I'll be home doing nothing.
Well, for some.
Listening to you. Betty De Silva's up next. RTE 2FM.